We're back, peak to pit. TJ, it's been a long time since we've done this, but since we're back, that means that college football is right around the corner.
Yeah, 6 months or so. I think we our last episode was the Super Bowl. I think that's what we're going to try and do from now on. I think that, you know, that we don't get deep enough into recruiting. We don't get into, you know, a bunch of other things. And so, yeah, I think it makes sense just to kind of do this as seasons, do it August through whatever. We'll go through the rest of the NFL season. February, that encapsulates National Signing Day. You also get the Super Bowl in there. And then we'll take off during the summer. It's too crazy in these households during the summer, I feel like. Seven kids between us. And then like me having to take care of Kara and Eric having to take care of you. Like, I mean, it's just, it's a lot going on. So how's your summer been?
I know it's work.
It's rough on us. Please send prayers. How's your summer been? How's your day been? How are you?
Summer has been good. Crazy. I feel like, you know, now that we're back in school, we're on a little bit more of a schedule. The girls are back on the same gymnastic schedule, which they weren't in the summer. So I feel like I'd never had a second to breathe the whole summer, but now it's like, okay, we're back in our routine. The babies go to meet the teacher tomorrow because they will do 2-day 2s starting the week after. Nice. So that's like a big thing. I'll have 6 whole hours without children a week. I don't even know what I'm going to like do with all my free time. Craziest thing happened today, though. So, you know, Eric and I are really involved in Hadley and Hayden school. And Eric is in charge of the dad's club. And they had a real problem with drop-off last year. Parents just going places they weren't supposed to go, pulling in front of buses, like situations that put kids at risk, even if it was totally on accident. So at the beginning of the year, the assistant principal and I talked, and we decided that we would have Eric and a couple of the dads from the dad's club kind of help the first few days of school to remind people the right way to go to car line, remind people what areas are off limits, like things like that, so that maybe we could set the tone for the year. Everybody could remember how it's supposed to be done, and then, you know, everybody behave. So last week, school started on Wednesday. Eric and a couple of dads did it Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Perfectly smooth. So on Friday afternoon, the assistant principal texts me and she's like, listen, I don't think we need the dads next week. Like everything went so smoothly. Tell them thank you so much for their help that like it made everything run great. But like, I think everybody knows then we're good. So I told Eric, don't worry about going on Monday. Everything's good. Monday morning comes in. I walk in the office because I'm going to go to our PTA room to work some. And our assistant principal is standing there in tears because a parent had, I guess, basically decided the front of our school buses drop off and cars are not allowed to drop off there. Cars drop off in the back of school. Well, parents decided they didn't want to wait in the car line, so pulled into the front of school and sent their kid out who almost got hit by a bus. And the assistant principal had to like scream the kid's name and, you know, nothing bad happened. And then later another parent pulled up and she was like, you know, I'm sorry, you can't drop your children off here. And she basically was like, well, I'm dropping them off anyway. And like threw her kids out of the car. And it just was apparently very stressful. So she's like, can Eric come back tomorrow? And I was like, yes, Eric will come tomorrow. So this morning, Eric goes, you know, they give the dads this like orange traffic vest. And he's
safety
got like
vest.
A big,
it's like, it looks like a safety patrol.
Like, yeah, you know what they're there for. So he said that there were several parents that tried to pull in and he had to explain like front of the school is only for buses. It's for kids' safety. You got to go around, whatever. Well, one parent just hauled around him, like sped around him to go to the front of the school from where he was standing. So Eric walked over, you know, she pulled up right in front and let her kid out. And so Eric went and stood in front of her car and was like, ma'am, listen, you can't pull in to drop off here. You've got to go to the back of school. So like from now on, please make sure you go to the back of the school. Well, she started like yelling and cursing at him out the window. So Eric said, he was like, ma'am, I can hear you. I need to know that you can hear me, that you are not allowed to pull in here. She hit him with her car. Like, I mean, she didn't like run him over, but she bumped into him with her car and then drove around him. And apparently there were some other parents that like had meetings and things at school. So they were in the parking lot. So like they ran in to tell admin that a car hit a parent. And our assistant principal called me like, or texted me actually. It was like, oh my gosh, is Eric okay? I'm so sorry. And he's totally fine. But that's the kind of crazies that these schools are dealing with at 7:12 in the morning.
Whew. Yeah, I can't take all that. If somebody, but I, Does Eric stay pretty calm on stuff like that? I'd have lost.
Generally, no, but he knew what role he was in with school. So like, yes. But if that had happened while we just happened to be walking across the street in our neighborhood, it probably would have been a very different outcome. But like,
yeah,
he knew the whole point of being there was to diffuse things, not like, you know, stir them up. But see, so he's going
but
back
he got
tomorrow.
Hit with the car. Yeah, I got hit with a car. It wasn't like he did something, you know.
Right. Right. But like, also just don't come in there. Like, you know, and she apparently told the assistant principal, I don't know why you're calling me. You should be talking to your volunteer who wouldn't let me in. And she was like, ma'am, the volunteer is there because they're helping us not let people in. Like, right. That's the point.
Doing his job.
So
parents are ridiculous.
Yeah.
Totally. It's ridiculous. Not so bad on us just yet because our kids are so little.
Right.
But yeah, like, people are ridiculous, and I can't wait to get to where a little bit older.
How do you
and
want your like first grade student or whatever grade they're in to like respect authority and listen to other people and behave if the mom's out there acting like that?
Yeah, yeah, they're probably horrible kids. Like I'll just say that. I'll put on put that on record. We're live. Everything's it's recorded. We'll put it out. I won't. They have the bad kids. Whoever Hadley and Hayden come home and complain about, like, that's probably their
parent. That's probably their kid. Well, I feel bad because this is not this child's fault, but it sure as heck is this parent's fault. So
I would agree with that. All right, let's jump into some stuff. Let's talk a little college football. It's been a while. If you guys are watching, if you're listening, hit the share button, hit retweet, or you can share it organically. Either way, we certainly would appreciate it. New coach, Napier was hired by when we were doing this, so it's not, like it's totally a shock or anything, but right. You made it through the summer. Football season is here. What are your expectations? I mean, the expectation at Florida and Florida State, it's to win a championship every year, but like
sure.
Past that, right? Like, okay, I don't want the cliche canned answer, but like, what kind of turnaround do you think it is? Like, what kind of timeline do you kind of expect things? When do you expect, not to start an argument early, but I don't know that Florida legitimately expects to compete for the SEC this year.
Right.
But like what kind of timeline do you put on that? And what do you expect out of this year and the near future?
Honestly, I think any coach that coaches at Florida, at least if you look at like the short-term history, gets 3 years to prove that they are really headed in the right direction. And 2 years, in McElwain's case was generous because he only made it 2.5. I mean, I think you probably get 3 years to show that you're going to trend the right way. I think that all the things that we've seen so far are that Napier's trending in the right direction. Florida's had a couple really great things happen that coincide with Napier being there, but aren't a direct result of Napier. One of those being the new dorms, which were already in the works prior to him going there, where they basically rented out a high-rise apartment complex for their student athletes. So that happened right at the very beginning of him getting there. That's a huge improvement. That's something that Florida has needed. And then this football facility that's been under construction for the last, I guess, like 18 months, almost 2 years at this point, which also not Napier's design. He does have his fingerprints on it because he did get to go in there and make some of the changes he wanted. But this was happening regardless of who the head coach was. And those two things are huge for whoever happens to be the head coach of the University of Florida. Florida's facilities got upgraded when we were in school towards the end of Eric and I being in school. And at the time, that was ahead of the game. They had some of the best facilities at that time, but that's been a long time. So their facilities really lagged. They were in the bottom third of the SEC up until this new facility opened on Sunday. So this is huge for Florida recruiting wise. They have a state-of-the-art facility that blows, almost everybody out of the water except for maybe the top three or four programs in the country. They've got a lot of momentum recruiting wise. I think Napier has really turned it on in the last couple of weeks. You are on Twitter a lot. You see that, 2 months ago, Gator fans were not happy at all with the direction that recruiting
was going.
He had to
write an open letter to get them off
of his back. which honestly, as a fan, is mortifying, right? That
cringeworthy.
Like you complain to get a guy that took you to a New Year's Six Bowl 3 out of his 4 years. You complain to get him fired, but then so you got what you want, right? And then you weren't even going to give the guy through the off season to show that he could do something. He hasn't even coached a game for Florida. And I think that that's embarrassing that had to happen, right? That open letter had to happen. But one of the things that Napier said is patience. We're going to build this the way that we think is the right way to build it, which obviously that's a cliche line. We hope that, you know, all football coaches hopefully are going to build with, you know, brick by brick instead of with cardboard or whatever. But he said, this is going to take time. He knew that what he walked into was not what he wanted. And I think that you're already seeing that payoff. His recruiting class that he's putting together looks good. It's filled a lot of areas of need. He's done something that he said was really important, and it is, which is keep Florida kids home. There's only, I want to say, 3 kids in this upcoming signing class that are committed so far that are from out of state. I think 1's from Alabama, 2 are from outside of Atlanta. That's what you need to do to win championships in the state of Florida, is keep your guys from the state here. And Mullen wasn't doing that by the end of his tenure. There were guys leaving for Alabama, for Georgia. Napier's had at least 2 head-to-head recruiting battles with Saban and with Kirby Smart that he has won. And that's not something that I think Gator fans have seen the last couple of years. So all of those things are positive, but all of it's going to mean nothing if the product on the field doesn't start to improve.
Yeah. I think this year, and we'll talk a little bit about the schedule. We'll talk some expectations for Napier here, and then we'll talk a little expectations for Norvell. And then we'll talk, you know, what we kind of expect out of both teams for this year. So kind of macro and then go into the micro. But yeah, I mean, my take on Napier is they probably should give him more than 3 years, right? Now
they should. I'm always a proponent of that. Yeah, I just don't think that's realistic. That's not the way the fan base works.
I actually do think he's going to be a good coach. Like, this is not setting up a troll for later. Like, I actually do think that, like, he's very organized. He puts an emphasis on hard work, large staff. I just think it's going to take time. Like, I don't think they're going to be on the same planet with Georgia this year, right? And honestly, I don't know if one recruiting cycle, like next year, I don't know if that's enough to really be on the same level as Georgia.
Right.
And so, like, I think you're probably going to lose to Georgia in the next 2 years, right? And so, like, if you're only giving him 3 years anyway, sheesh, you better hope that he wins that third one. But yeah, I do think the things that Napier can do are, like, you've got to stop losing to, like, the Kentuckys and the South Carolinas and the Missouris. And so, like, that
you've got to always beat the teams that you're supposed to beat, right? Like, you beat the teams you're supposed to beat first, and then you pull an upset, and then you just always win. And there's a progression to that.
Right. And that's the thing that's the same thing Norvell needs to do, right? Like, if he loses to LSU, nobody's going to care. Right. I mean, people want to win. You lose to Clemson, nobody's going to care. You lose to Miami or Florida, which they went 1-1 in those games last year, but you lose any of those games, and people are like, okay, well, we get it, right? Those teams have more talent.
Right.
Well, like, if you lose to BC or you lose to Syracuse or you lose to Wake Forest, or, like, those are the games you got to stop losing. And so, same thing with Napier, right? Like, you've got to win the games you're supposed to win.
Right.
And that has to be the first step to me. And I think he will be successful. I think that it's an incredibly difficult job. Mm-hmm. And it's very much like, Taggart or Norvell taking over Florida State, where you're down as a program and you're also in your division is the top team in college football. Like, when Taggart came in and when Norvell came in, like Clemson, it's like Clemson, Alabama every year. And so I think
TJ, it is worth pointing out that, like, there's no arguing that Florida's down, but prior to last season, there was 3 New Year's Six Bowls in a row. So I don't know that I really think the level of down at both the programs is the same right now.
I don't know. I mean, you know,
that's Florida, not what our Jimbo tell us.
Jimbo left in 2017, and the 5 years before that, Florida State had been to 5 straight New Year's Six Bowls.
Sure.
So, but
2017. I mean, how long? That was a long time ago.
No. I'm not saying the programs are in the same place right now.
Okay.
I mean, I will say their Vegas odds are both 6.5 games. And we can talk about the schedule here in a minute.
Yeah.
But that's where I think that the takeover is very similar. I think that, like,
I think where the takeover is, but I think the destruction is longer at Florida State.
So
I think the rebuild is longer, is harder. If you're talking about that the last time you were up was 2017. 2016.
Right. No,
I mean,
I'm not.
2 years ago, Florida was in a New Year's Six Bowl. So I think
that's not my argument. Wrong. I'm not saying anything about what's happened past Taggart and Norvell. I'm saying that basically Florida's down right now. Florida State was down in 2017, and you were down with the best team in college football in your division.
Right. Yeah.
Outside of Alabama. That's my only takeaway. Nothing that Norvell has done since then. I'm not making any kind of prediction about how long it'll take Napier or anything like that.
Do you think Norvell has? I mean, what are your thoughts on how recruiting is going for Florida State?
I think this year is really important. I think Florida State is – So this is a wild take. I'm going to see what your thoughts are on this. But I did tweet this the other day in a reply, though, so nobody could see it because I didn't want to get hate mail. I think Florida State's recruiting better than they should be right now. Now, I think they're recruiting worse than the standard, right? Like the standard at Florida State is top five class all the time.
100% all the time.
I think that Florida State is recruiting slightly better than their record. Now, I don't think it's massively better. I don't think it's like, wow, this good Lord, this is impressive.
Well, I mean, but Florida State should be an easy sell, right? Really, truly, Florida State, Miami, they should all be decently easy sells to these kids that grew up watching these teams and live in this state where there's more talent than any other state in the entire country. So I can see why Florida State would recruit better than their record. And they're marketable in that aspect.
And, you know, Florida State had finished with the number 20 overall class last year. They were the only team in the top 20 to not make a bowl. So they recruited better than everyone else that made a bowl, right? Or that didn't make a bowl, right? And so, I don't know, that's probably grasping at straws. Like, that's probably putting a really – now, again, I'm not trying to put lipstick on a pig or, you know, whatever cliche you want to use. I think they're doing – like, he's bringing in slightly better talent every year, right?
So,
but eventually that has to translate. Florida State brings back 80 – I'm sorry, no, let me back that up. It's reverse. They bring back the 11th most production in college football this year. Like, that's a lot of returning guys. Like, there just weren't very many guys that went to the NFL. Jermaine Johnson went to the NFL. Jayshon Corbin went to the NFL. Kier Thomas went to the NFL. And that was it. Like, you didn't lose anyone else that you're like, oh, man, I can't believe we lost this guy.
Right.
Quarterback's back. Entire offensive line is back. Entire defense minus one or two guys is back. Like, you've got to – and so your development has to take over. They've obviously added a few pieces in the recruiting class, in the transfer portal. They've done a fairly good job in the transfer portal. I have a buddy that says – you know, recruiting or living on the transfer portal is kind of like living paycheck to paycheck. Like, you can get by, but it's not the best way to live.
Not stable.
So because eventually that luck runs out. Like, you're eventually going to miss. Like, Florida State's gotten some hits in the transfer portal. I mean, Jermaine Johnson came in and went first round, but you're not going to get hits like that every year. And so, I think they're recruiting slightly better than they should be, but it's got to translate to wins this year. We're going to talk about, you know, the schedule and the record and everything else. I think he needs to get to 7 wins. I mean, I think if he makes a bowl, I think it'd be fine because they'll make a bowl and then they'll play somebody terrible in the bowl.
I mean, I think there's a difference between looking at it logically and seeing what the rebuild was, how much time he should be guaranteed. How much time are your fans going to allow? Like, are they going to look at it like you're looking at it and approach it logically?
Yeah. So I would say that our fan base is not quite as toxic as yours.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think, you know.
I'm not arguing with you there. I think Florida's fan base is just rabid.
Yeah, I think there's a subset of the fan base that already wants him gone. Okay. And then there's a larger subset of the fan base that's like, prove it to me this year. I hate the excuses. I hate the, you know, oh, well, this happened and that happened. Because at the end of the day, Mike Norvell's made a lot of mistakes and has not been perfect by any means. Mm-hmm. I do think that he took over at a very difficult time with the pandemic basically happening as soon as he started. And so he lost really all benefit of like a bump class, right? Like, you're seeing Napier recruit really, really well right now. And most new coaches do. Mm-hmm. Kelly at LSU is recruiting really well. Cristobal is recruiting really well at Miami. You guys recruit most new coaches. Taggart recruited extremely well his first class. I think it was like, you have something to sell. There's been no product in the field. Nobody's seen you suck yet. People are excited. And he really didn't get that. Like, couldn't get any kids on campus his entire first year. And so I think that really set him behind the eight ball. I also think that, like you kind of mentioned, where I do agree with you on the fact that Florida is not the dumpster flyer that Florida State was when Mullen left to where Taggart left. Like, when Taggart left, like, it was an absolute train wreck, absolute dumpster fire. And so I think that folks knew it would be a rebuild when Norvell got here. I don't think they knew that a worldwide global pandemic was coming.
Sure,
that
would keep kids
off campus for a year.
Right.
So I think this year is for the guys that are still like kind of holding on faith and holding on that he is successful. I think this is kind of the show me year, right? You you need to get to 7 or 8 wins. I'm actually really, really locked in on 8 wins. I'll tell you how I get there in, in a minute, but it may have to do with the bowl. But I think it's like, okay, you went from 3 wins, then you went to 5 wins, and there was some hope, some promise in those 5, you know, in those 5 wins, not, you know, again, to silver cloud or silver lining on a cloud here. When you start 0-5 and then you go 5-2 or 0-4 and you go 5-3 over your last 8, yeah, if you just do 5-3 twice, you know, like, yeah, that's the way to, you know, just don't start freaking 0-4.
Right.
So, I don't know, there was some optimism, there was some positivity coming out of last year. If he can get to 7 or 8 wins, I mean, I think that that will be enough. I think he'll stick around and they'll keep him. If he, I think at 6 they would keep him. I think 5 or less, like, they've got to move on. I think when you look at the schedule too, like, we argued last year about whose schedule was tougher. We had the big LSU and UNC argument. Obviously both those teams suck, so it became like a terrible, you know, argument to have. But
when you look at recruiting classes,
whose crap is worse. So yeah, I think Florida State's schedule, there's a lot of tough games and there's a lot of really easy games. There's not, to me, there's not as much, like, you know, and I think Florida's schedule is pretty similar in that fact. Like, I think there's some games that are like, oh my goodness. And then, you know, Florida probably has a few more coin flips in there, but yeah, I mean, he needs to beat the teams that he's supposed to beat. I think there's, we'll look at schedules here in a sec, but I think there's like 5 or 6 games on Florida State's schedule. If they were to lose any of them, I would find it a big, big problem.
Yeah.
I think that there's maybe a couple less on Florida's from that. I don't know if it's all the way up to 6. There's probably 3 games on Florida State's schedule that I don't like them in at all. And then, you know, maybe 3 more coin flips. So anyway, we can look at the schedules and talk about it, but yeah, like, he needs to make a bowl. He needs to make a bowl and that'd be a start. I think if he makes a bowl this year, I think that it goes 6-6 this year, makes a bowl, wins a bowl, 7 wins. That is improvement. I think next year will be kind of still okay, you need to get that up to 8 or 9. If he can get to 8 or 9 this year, you know, win 7, then 8 in a bowl, win 8, win 9 in a bowl, whatever. I think if he could do that, then I think that the pressure would be off a little bit last year, you know, next year, because you've already shown it, you've proved it.
Moving, trending the right way.
Yeah. So, okay, you want to look at your schedule first or mine? What do you want to do?
It makes no difference to me, wherever you want to go first.
So, you guys start out with a banger. We both kind of start – well, we start out with a kind of a dud on a week 0 game, which is exciting. Football will be back in 11 days.
Excited. I can't even tell you.
We'll go with you guys. I want to hear you go 12-0 again like last year. So you guys start with Utah. Game one, a really tough team.
Number 7 in the preseason AP, which I thought they'd be top 10. I was honestly a little surprised that they were as high as 7.
Had a good year last year. Yeah, brought a lot of guys back. Honestly, should have beaten Ohio State in the Rose Bowl if their quarterback doesn't go down. You know, whipped Mario pretty hard a couple of times last year out at Oregon. Florida's a slight favorite in this game. What are your thoughts around this one?
So I think Florida does beat Utah. I think that there's a couple factors that play well for Florida in this game. I don't in any way think that it's like a blowout or anything like that. I think it probably starts a little tight, and I think Florida, you know, wins by 7-10 potentially at the end. I think that it being Napier's first game in the Swamp, the Swamp is electric pretty much all the time, but it's always electric a coach's first game out of the tunnel. Like, I mean, Florida, that is something Florida fans have had to do a lot lately and do well. I think the atmosphere will be awesome. I think that Utah is not going to be prepared for the humidity that comes with the heat that's going to happen. I saw things where they were saying that if they were practicing in their indoor facility with the heat turned on so that they could get used to it. And I saw somebody else comment that, like, okay, well, first take a shower, don't dry off, put your pads directly on, then go into the facility with the heat turned all the way on. That's going to be a more accurate depiction of what you're feeling in the Swamp. And I mean, it's a 7 o'clock kick. I would have liked a 3:30 even better, just temperature wise, but it's going to be 90 degrees. It's going to be 90 degrees in the Swamp at 7 o'clock at night. I mean, that's just, so I think that those two factors play well for Florida. So I do think they win at the end. I think, like I said, I think the first half is a little tight. But I think that, like, that's a hell of a game to come out the gate with. You know, it is not the, you know, Sisters of the Blind that they're used to opening against. Utah is a real test, right?
Yeah.
And then from that, Kentucky comes to the Swamp. This is another hard game. Napier does not get the benefit of starting with a cupcake or two to kind of see what he's working with. His guys are going to have to turn into men week one. There is no tune-up games that happen here. Florida's tune-up games happen later on. I do think they beat Kentucky as well. Which, you know, so then you're talking about you leaving week two, you've beaten two top 25 teams. Florida's currently not ranked. Like, what does that do for you to beat a 7? And I want to say Kentucky's maybe like a 20 or something like that right now. You know, where does that, you've got to think Florida's decently ranked at that point, right? If they were to win those two games.
Yeah. I'd say like between 15 and 20 would kind of be my guess there.
If they win 7 and if they beat the number 7 and the number 20 team, when half the people in the top 25 will not have even played a ranked opponent, let alone two.
Yeah. I mean, I think 15 ish is fair. I mean, I don't think they'll be top 10 at that point.
I think that there's a decent chance that they're somewhere between 9 and 13 ish, but I mean, we'll see. It also depends on how they win, right? They win convincingly both of those games. That's a different ranking than if they squeak by at the end of both of those with the home field advantage and, you know, whatnot. Yeah. But
and preseason rankings are, you know, we know that they're pretty stupid,
I hate
right?
them. Like, I wish they didn't rank anybody till week 6, but they're money grabs. So,
yeah, I mean, Florida is going to be a favorite. Florida is a favorite in the Utah game as an unranked team. And so to me, that's the biggest thing is like, was Florida ranked too low? Was Utah ranked too high?
Yeah, that
probably
is
a little bit of both of those.
Thing when it's such a close.
Right. So that
it's right. I'll be interested to see how that line moves too.
Yeah, that's a tough one for me. Okay. So I've got a reverse take on this when we get to a couple of games in the Florida State schedule. I like Florida individually in both of these games. Like if both games were happening in a vacuum, I like Florida to win. Now, not by a lot, because I think Kentucky's quarterback is probably one of the best in the conference. And I think Utah is really, really tough. I do think that just knowing that, you know, unless he does something stupid in a hotel room the night before, Anthony Richardson being healthy in game one should make a big difference. Like if you're playing Utah like later in the year, maybe that's a little bit tougher. Maybe that, you know, if you got guys that have bumps and bruises or if it's not so hot, I do think that the atmosphere, the Swamp kind of being juiced, that, you know, again, Anthony Richardson being, we assume, fully healthy going into that game. I mean, you know, I certainly don't want a camp injury to happen. You know.
Yeah.
Like that'd be pretty awful. So I think I lean Florida there. I also think I lean Florida against Kentucky. I think they'll be slightly better, a little more talented. I do worry about the defense against Kentucky's quarterback, but I still think Florida pulls that out. In a vacuum, I've got Florida going 2-0. But big time football, a lot of times in football, you're never as good as you were the week before. You're never as bad as you were the week before. I think if Florida – I actually like think Florida goes 1-1 here, but I don't know which one I think they lose. Like I think if they beat Utah coming off of that, I think they have a little bit of a letdown against Kentucky. Okay. If they lose to Utah, I think it galvanizes them and they beat Kentucky. So if you just, you know, if both games just were happening like at opposite ends of the year, I'd pick Florida in both. Okay. Not by a lot, like by 3 each, but I kind of expect Florida to split. Okay. I have a similar take about a couple of Florida State games later. It's the reverse. Like I'm picking both opponents, but I think Florida State wins one of them. I just don't know which one. So so anyway, I guess 1.5 wins in those first two is kind of what I've got. I think, you know, Florida probably wins both, but I mean, who knows? Like, you know, we're projecting a lot. And Florida did, that's the one thing we didn't talk about. Florida did lose quite a bit of production. Their top two pass catching targets, top two touchdown leaders left after last year, top running back left. You know, I think we all expect Anthony Richardson to have a good year, but he had times of weakness last year.
He's an unproven commodity at this point. His flashes were brilliant, but, you know,
the low
we
points
didn't
were
see a whole, whole lot
well.
Out of him. Yeah.
So I think it's, you know, it's knowing that, right? Like yeah, I think there's a lot of different ways it can go. But I do like Florida. Like, I like Florida slightly in both games, but we'll see how it goes. I don't want to – we don't have to go, like, so crazy here.
Yeah.
Obviously, expect Florida to beat USF. Yes, I'll even skip the Tennessee game and say I really like Florida to win the next two games with Eastern Washington and Missouri. I really don't think Missouri will be great this year. Homecoming game then. But I do – okay, so I know you're – you know, I know you're not going to love this. I like Tennessee to win this game. I know we were arguing about it the other day. Mm-hmm. I do think that this is going to be a tough one. First true road test for the team. I know that we say it every year that Tennessee's, you know, finishes a year good and they never start really good. Mm-hmm. I do like hype
so
there. I think it's different this year with Tennessee. And I could be wrong. I could be fake.
My win-loss is out right before we do this. I actually put – that I think this is Florida's closest game of the year. And I put it as a loss for now, but I think
I could change that if they blow out Kentucky or something.
And I could too. And I mean, hopefully I do. I do feel in my gut that Tennessee always finishes so much stronger than they start. And that I always love where Florida plays Tennessee, because I can't tell you how many seasons I've said, like, oh man, glad we didn't face this Tennessee in September. So I do think that that's their history, right? I think this team might be built a little bit differently, hence why I'm predicting this, but I think this is Florida's closest game. This is the closest coin toss in my mind. I think that this game could go, you know, either way. I do have USF as a win. I have Eastern Washington and Missouri as a win as well. We go into LSU. I have LSU as a win, but I have that as the second closest game that Florida plays.
Closest win. Yeah.
Yes.
I am a complete coin flip on this. Mm-hmm. I just think
home
LSU
field advantage
is the only thing I know
led me to the win. I think
LSU has more talent on their team. Like, I don't, you know,
I think that's a fair statement. I mean, LSU had a down year, but they've recruited the hell out of, you know,
and,
for
and
the last
like Florida, five, like you know, Florida, they years, had a whatever. Lot of guys quit at the end of the year, right? Mm-hmm. They, you know, so I don't know. That's just, you got two new systems, two new head coaches,
sure,
two new quarterbacks start, you know, like, who the heck knows on that one? I think I like Florida there because it's at home, but like, I won't be shocked with anything here. I'll tell you this, I'm glad we're playing LSU first game and they haven't had half the year to warm up. Like,
because the talent wise, like, at some point, talent takes over and LSU has. And that's why I think that, you know, when we talked about UNC last year and LSU and things like that, LSU, regardless of what their record is, can go toe to toe with pretty much anybody in the country talent wise. And that's a scary factor that always has to be in all of the predictions that we make. They're going to have more talent than almost everybody that they play, always. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. Then we go to UGA. I do have that as a loss.
I don't even think there's a ton to say there. I have the same way. They're going to be really good again this year. And Florida's
just
needs to catch
up.
I
don't think that Florida was as far away from Georgia last year that you thought they were. I thought that I felt like in that game, a lot of things went absolutely wrong, wheels kind of fell off and things, but I feel like it was five plays away from being a very, very different game. You can take that for what it is. They got their butts kicked, but I didn't feel like it was as big a gap as it should have been given what Georgia had been recruiting wise and things like that. I think it's that huge of a gap.
I agree with you. I still think it's a big gap, but I agree with you in the fact that that game last year, Florida's defense got up and showed up for that. Mm-hmm. And they did a really good job there. So I'll say that. I also thought that UGA looked just weird in that game. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, so it's like, it's always the battle of like, how much was it UGA looking bad? How much was it Florida looking good? Probably a little bit of both. So I don't disagree with that. I thought Florida played well enough in the first half, made some crucial mistakes that went down in the half, and that was pretty much the end of it because they just couldn't move the ball on, you know, a terrific defense. But, I mean, I've got UGA winning, and then I've also got A&M winning the next week.
I have A&M winning the next one too, but the caveat with that is that sometimes losses galvanize your team. So is a first-year coach that seems to have the buy-in, does he get two losses in a row? I mean, maybe because A&M does have a couple really talented classes that they bought that are they're playing with right now. So, you know, maybe that's the difference, right? But I could see a scenario where it doesn't happen because of back-to-back losses. And I do for sure think the loss happens at UGA, but I have it as a loss too.
It would surprise me if they were to win either of those, certainly beating Georgia a little bit more. But I do think A&M is going to be really good this year, like 9-3, 10-2 type year. And so it would surprise me if that game was in the Swamp.
Yeah, I would have a different maybe, feeling on that too, potentially. But like on I said, the road, I have it as a loss.
That's a tough one. This was a game that South Carolina was a game I thought Florida quit in last year. Mm-hmm. I still think this is a tough game. I think I lean Florida just because it's in Gainesville, but this is not one that I'm willing to just write off and say.
This will be senior night too at UF because the last two games are away. Road, and I think that there's an emotional thing that comes from that. Like it is hard to explain what it's like for seniors when the coach that brought them in is let go. There's a new transition. Like senior night will be emotional for the guys that stuck it out that are on this team. I think that'll be a factor. It being the last game in the Swamp is, you know, always kind of an emotional thing, take senior night aside. But I think that it will be close. I don't think that they're, and I mean, that can change. My prediction may change seeing how the rest of the season, you know, plays out. But I have that as a win.
I think Florida wins that game. I would not be shocked at all. I mean, you know, even with Florida quitting, I mean, this is still a team that beat Florida by like 30 last year, right? So they have the pieces to be able to do some things. Again, we're going to know a lot more about this team and both of these teams after they've played eight games. And we may get to the second Saturday in November and say like, oh my gosh, you know, Florida has no chance or South Carolina has no chance in this or whatever, right? Like we may know by then. But yeah, I think Florida wins this.
This is a scenario where South Carolina is not more talented. That doesn't mean that they haven't been better coached. That doesn't mean that they don't have the better pieces in the right spots. But this isn't a scenario like an LSU game where you're like, well, it doesn't really matter what they look like ever because we know that toe-to-toe, they've got some of the best talent in the country. That is not – I don't think that that's necessarily the case for South Carolina. That doesn't mean that they don't win, but if they do win, I don't think it's because they have massive amounts of talent.
So – I think we both think Florida beats Vandy. No real shocker there. And then the last game of the year on Friday night, Florida State, Florida. As of right now, Florida State is a 2-point favorite in this game, which is a little bit interesting. But as we kind of alluded to earlier, Florida and Florida State, their over-unders for wins and losses are both set at 6.5, which is kind of interesting to me. Vegas kind of saying like both of these teams are 6-ish to 7 win teams. I actually think there's a really good chance that both of these teams, and it doesn't come out of my record because I think I would have them at 7-5. But I think there's a decent chance that both of these teams go into this game at 6-5 and the winner gets a winning record before the bowl. I'll just say it like this early in the year. I kind of like Florida State to win this game. I think that they were a muffed punt away from winning last year. As much as we talk about Florida quitting, in the late parts of the season, I do think they got up for that Florida State game. I mean, you could see how hard they were playing and there was no quit in the team at all. And so I think I like Florida State here close, just like last year, maybe a 3-point game or something. It's really hard to predict.
I understand a 3-point game. I don't know how you sat in that stadium watching that game and thought that that was ever really, tight. It didn't feel like that at all in the stadium. It never felt out of control. And this is a team without a coach, without, you know, lots of pieces, but I last year didn't feel close to me, regardless of what the score says. I have it as a Florida win. I'm not saying they're going to blow out Florida State. I think that 2.5 right there is probably a home field advantage. I think that's Vegas telling us they think these teams are pretty equal, pretty which even. Is an interesting concept just in itself to me, but you know,
to comment on that though, the teams being equal, I think that again, we mentioned that Florida State brings back the 11th most production in the country and Florida's like down in like the 50s.
Right? Sure.
And so Florida has talent, but we've just not seen any of it on the field. Right.
Like, and I mean, and that's so probably
I think that's
what
a big, that's a big part of it, right?
Like I think so
you're
too.
Assuming that like guys are going to gel together.
Sure.
And whereas with Florida State, you're kind of like, oh, well, if they just take a little bit of a step forward, you know, at each position. But I mean, I know we argued about it the last time when the game actually happened. I mean, I do think the first three quarters were close. Florida State ends up, Florida ends up punting from their own, you know, shout out Eric, but Florida ends up punting from their own end zone. And the guy hits like a 70 yarder that Florida State muffs.
Yeah.
If he, you know, I honestly thought that was a play of the game was his punt, you know, because if Florida State, if he doesn't do that, I think they have the ball in plus territory, you know, down a field goal. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to, I mean, last year I picked Florida, you know, I'm not being a major homer. Last year I picked Florida to win this game by like 17. So, you know, going into the year, I mean, I was pretty realistic with where I thought the teams were. I think they're a little closer this year and, you know, it being in Doak matters. I also think that a huge factor that we haven't really talked about for both teams is, you know, quarterbacks kind of staying healthy, right? Like if either quarterback goes down, then, you know, every game's a loss. So minus some maybe like the Eastern Washington stuff. All right, let's go through Florida State's schedule real quick. We'll be a little bit quicker because I'm supposed to jump on another thing. But they have the week zero game against Duquesne. Some of our fan base is so jaded from the Jacksonville State thing last year that they, you know, ask about Duquesne. I mean, I truly believe that Duquesne would lose to Jacksonville State by like 28. I'm not nervous about that at all. I think Florida State starts out 1-0. I assume you feel the same way.
Yeah.
The LSU and Louisville games, I'll do these together. This is kind of my reverse Utah Kentucky. I like both LSU and Louisville really close. Like, I don't think Florida State's getting blown out by either of these teams. Again, Florida State's a 3-point dog to LSU in New Orleans. So,
yeah, which is also interesting. Vegas, like, smoked a lot of crack before they made
their predictions. I like LSU close in this one, I like Louisville close. In a vacuum, but I do think that Florida State finds a way to get one of these upsets. So again, like, give me like half a win out of these two. You know, again, if they're in a vacuum, I think going on the road.
I feel like Louisville is way less of an upset than, like, I think Florida State has a legitimate chance in the Louisville game. I think it would be an upset for them to beat LSU.
I think Louisville is going to be a bigger favorite, as crazy as that. Unless we beat LSU, I think they'll be like a 5 to 6 point favorite. So,
well, I think these lines will probably move over time as well.
Yeah. So, well, I think the LSU one, I mean, I don't think anything that Florida State could do in the Duquesne game would matter, but I'm sure you have LSU, but then what do you think in the Louisville game?
I think that Florida State has a legitimate chance of the LSU game now. I mean, excuse me, in the Louisville game. I feel like I predicted Florida State to win so many more games than they did last season when we did this episode, but I predicted
six. We were both at six there.
I'll take LSU in the Louisville game. FSU in the Louisville game, but I'll take LSU. I was meaning I'll take LSU and I'll take LSU and I'll take FSU.
Florida State comes home to face Boston College. I think the Noles win this game. I don't think it's a gimme by any means. I think that they've got a really talented quarterback in Phil Dracovic and a really, really nice wide receiver that Miami tried to pay a boatload of money in the NIL world, and he said no in Zay Flowers. But I do think the Noles win. They got up big last year, had to hold Boston College off in the end, but I think the Noles win that one. And then I'll do it again. I'll stick with two. I'll go in pairs of two tonight. Wake Forest coming in town. If Sam Hartman's there, I think it's a little tougher, but if he's not there, I obviously like FSU to win without their starting quarterback in. Obviously don't know what he's going through, but it reported that he's taken a leave from the team for a little while, non-medical type stuff, or like non-on-field injury, you know, whatever. So I actually like Florida State to win both of these either way. Boston College and Wake Forest, both games back at home. Give me 2-0 in this stretch.
Okay. I think they split this, and I'm going to say that they beat Boston College and lose to Wake Forest.
So Wake Forest quarterback's still out, you still like them to lose to the backup there?
I do. Okay. I like them to lose to Wake Forest either way.
So I've got two losses in the next two games. I've got NC State and Clemson. I think both of those are incredibly tough. They actually played both of those teams really, really well last year. NC State game was the flu week where like 10 guys missed and then your starting quarterback wasn't there.
Yeah.
And it was 14-21. And we didn't, about five.
They didn't release that they had the flu. You knew because you told me about it prior to it happening. Yeah. But that didn't come out until like Friday night either.
Yeah. And so But they played him really well. It was 14-21 in the fourth quarter. The defense really held him down, and then we ended up having a turnover, and NC State scored to make it a two-score game. The Clemson game, you were over here for that one. That, you know, had a lead with 3 minutes to go. I think Florida State could hang around and be in both of these games, just like they were last year. I just don't foresee a way of, that they win. You know, I think there's a chance that they beat either one of them. Just based on I don't think Clemson's as good as they were 5-6 years ago. I don't think NC State's as good.
You don't think they're as good as that four that's sitting right next to them right now? Aren't they fourth? Okay.
Yeah, I think they're probably a top 12-ish team. Okay. I think they'll have a couple losses this year. But yeah, I think that Florida State does drop both of them. I think that, you know, either one of those would be a massive win, but I don't like either one of them. Also, in back-to-back weeks, that's tough.
I think they drop both as well.
I do think the schedule gets considerably easier
here.
They should not lose. So I talked about five games that would really concern me if Florida State lost. Those five games are Duquesne, obviously, Boston College, Georgia Tech, Syracuse, and Louisiana. I know Louisiana had a good year last year, but they lost nearly everyone from their staff and nearly everyone from their team. They graduated a crap. So this is not
they graduated last or they got cherry picked and went to Florida, which they also took, you know, Florida took quite a few players there too.
Last year's Louisiana team would have worried me a lot. This one doesn't really worry me much. So I like the Noles to win all those. And then I know I picked Florida, so I'll pick Miami to beat us. I picked us to beat Florida.
I'm picking Florida State to beat Miami.
So, and here's my take on that. I just think they split with the rivals, right? Sure. Like if they lose to Miami, I think they beat Florida. If they beat Miami, I think they lose to Florida, right? Obviously, crazier things could happen, but I think that's the easiest way to – when you're picking that, two rivals really close together. It's what happened last year. I think, you know, it would not shock me at all if that's to happen. Now, if we end up beating Miami on the road, I'm going to feel good about that Florida game. I'm going to feel better about that Florida game. But yeah, I think the schedule gets way, way easier. I think there's a great chance the team goes 4-1 to finish the year with wins against Georgia Tech, Syracuse, Louisiana, and then one of the two rivals. I think you've got us for 4-1 to finish the year as well.
I do. I just have you beating Miami and losing to Florida. I mean, I think given what we saw last year between those games, it makes more sense that you would beat Miami and lose to Florida. I also think that Miami is just kind of like fake gold spray paint on plastic. I know that they're really feeling themselves about the way that recruiting is going right now. I just think I think Miami has a bigger culture problem than we realize. And I think that that's part of why they're not able to fix these teams, regardless of who their coach is. I'm going to be a huge Florida State fan that day. Honestly, Miami, and there is no off-season team worse than Miami. And that's not just the case this year. I feel like that's every year.
It's just every worse year, this year.
It is. It's even worse this year because they actually have a little bit of hope. I think in the past it was like, well, we got to talk our smack now because we know we're not going to be able to talk it during the season. I think they actually believe some of what they're saying now. So maybe that's why it's even more obnoxious, but there is no more annoying off-season fan than Miami.
So you have, and I don't disagree, you have Florida at 9-3, Florida State at 7-5. What's interesting there is if you're wrong about the Florida State game at the end of the year, both teams will finish with an 8-4 record. That's actually what I think both teams' ceiling is. I think Florida goes 7-5 or 8-4. I think Florida State goes 7-5, 6-6 or 8-4. Right. Yeah. So I think they're kind of in the same boat. I think that, you know, your losses that you had with Tennessee, Georgia, and A&M. I think what will happen with Florida is they'll drop one of those other coin flips we talked about.
Right, which Kentucky, is possible. And that's Utah, like what we Florida talk State, about winning LSU. The games that you should first. And that is the first step, but it doesn't mean it happens year one. I think Florida's ceiling is actually 10-2. I know I'm not saying that Florida gets to that, but I think it kind of depends. And a coin flip for that game is for me is Tennessee. I don't think that changes necessarily what happens with UGA or A&M, but that game is the one that I'm not sure how I feel like will play out, because I do feel like in terms of talent wise, that's the team that Florida's closest to that I expect them to lose to, if that makes sense. The talent gap between them and Georgia and them and A&M is wider than any sort of gap between Tennessee and Florida. But again, I think the absolute ceiling like hit the lottery is 10-2. I don't think that happens. I think 9-3. But I mean, I like the idea of trending with three losses at the end there. Florida's schedule is kind of interesting because they do have that massive stretch in the middle of LSU, UGA, A&M, which is going to be hard. And they start out with a really hard stretch, but they do have two momentum builders in that schedule that USF or Kentucky and USF can build a little bit there if those both end up being wins. And then you got that Eastern Washington and Missouri, you can build some momentum there too. And then South Carolina Vandy going into a rival game against Florida State. I don't mind the way that this sets up outside of that gauntlet in the middle.
Yeah, I think Florida State's is very similar. I think that there's a couple of tough games at the beginning. Florida's got a couple of tough games at the beginning with Utah and Kentucky. Florida State has a couple of tough ones with LSU and then on the road on a Friday night to Louisville. That said, I like that you're playing the week zero game, so you get a bye before Louisville. That is something that I think will benefit FSU and maybe give them a better chance to upset them.
Get a tune-up too, right? Like, yeah, I think
huge for FSU.
As much as we love these blockbuster games week one, which we do because it's great TV, I honestly would prefer my team get a tune-up prior to
every time,
these primetime things. Yeah. I mean, you don't know until it happens, right?
Florida State hasn't won an opener since 2016, so it will be nice to get that monkey off their back.
Right there.
And then,
should happen this year. If that doesn't happen, then Florida State fans are going to be packing Norvell's bags for him.
Yeah. I think you got to fire him that day.
Right. Oh, you have to. I think if he loses to Duquesne, you fire him week zero. Yeah, but I don't see that happening.
It would be over. So anyway, all right, cool. Well, this was fun. Next week will be officially game week. We'll jump back on. We'll have a lot of fun. We'll chat. We'll hang out. We'll do it all over again. But thanks for hanging out. If you guys watched, if you listened, hit the like button, hit the subscribe button.
If you didn't like what you heard, talk to TJ.
Yeah, if you didn't like it, then make sure you retweet it you can ruin other people's day. You want to make sure they're miserable as well. For Allie Peake, TJ Pittenger, we'll be back next week, Tuesday night, live here again. See you guys next time.
Go Noles.
We'll be both cheering for FSU next week. It'll be great.
That is true.
Oh, man.